Welcome to the TeacherCast Educational Network, coming to you from the TeacherCast studios since 2011. Join us each week as we bring you the latest educational news, EdTech updates, and hottest interviews with today's most influential leaders in education. And now, for your host, Jeff Bradbury.
And welcome to the TeacherCast Educational Network. My name is Jeff Bradbury. Thank you so much for joining us today and making TeacherCast your home for professional development. This is Digital Learning Today, a show where we bring on educators and learn how they are making an impact in their classrooms and in their community. And today is a show that you are going to absolutely want to make sure you're listening the entire way through. A former educator, physical education teacher, basketball coach, now he's in the corporate world, making an impact not only on the things that he's doing in his own home, but also in the communities just like yours. I want to say thank you guys for checking out the show today. If this is the first time you're listening, you can find out more information about this and all of our shows over on teachercast.net/podcast. And we have so much great stuff happening over the summertime. I can't believe we're halfway there. We had a good time a couple weeks ago at the ISTE conference. Got a lot of great interviews up on that. You can check out everything over at teachercast.net/ISTE. And today's episode is going to be sponsored by my first book. I am so thrilled that the book is just about a month and a half old, but there's been so many great testimonials written for it. If you are looking to make an impact in your classrooms, head on over to teachercast.net/standards and check out everything on our new book, Impact Standards. Learn how you can take your strategic plan and see it through to the classroom. Impact Standards, a strategy for using digital learning and bringing in your instructional coaches into the classrooms. Again, teachercast.net/standards. My guest today is a former PE teacher, athletic director, administrator, basketball coach, and he currently is the vice president of community at an amazing company called Upmetrics. I want to bring on today my good friend, Mr. Steven Minix. Steve, how are you today? Welcome to the show.
I'm alive. Happy to be here. Excited to be here. I kind of run high energy, so excited to be here even at this late hour in the afternoon.
I am so excited to have you on here. You know, we had a chance a couple of days ago to get caught up and get to know each other here. You have had an amazing life, and I'm looking forward to getting into it. But before we really do, tell the audience a little bit, who is Steven Minix?
That's a great question. I'm a dad, man. I'm a dad. I'm a PE teacher. I'm a husband, father. I'm all the things, but I'm kind of one of those people that believes in putting good into the world, good energy, good effort, service, whatever role you get to play in people's lives, take it for like real, like really do the thing. And so gardening, Seahawk football, Mariner baseball, Sonics. I grew up in the Pacific Northwest, man. But I live down here in San Diego, and between flip-flops, three daughters, dogs, I just really enjoy what I got going on.
Well, I'm excited to have you on today. You know, today we're going to be talking all about that shift that you have made from being in the classroom to being out in the we like to call it the real world, right? All those different things. But I mean, sure. Really, you are out there making a dent in this world. You're doing some great things. Tell me a little bit about what you're doing these days at Upmetrics.
Absolutely. So about 10 years ago, almost now, our CEO, Drew Payne, had reached out to me through a connection through my wife and said he had an idea of kind of using information and data to help philanthropy move different. I was living in a nonprofit world, kind of at a school district running after school and athletics in LA, and I had just lost $8 million in grant money, and it really punched me in the face. The alignment was pretty stark, though, with what he was talking about, using info and relationships to kind of help philanthropy and impact move different. And I said, yo, I think I like this. And so we had a great conversation back in 14, kind of iterated on it. Now that's manifested into 10 years later. I'm the vice president of community for Upmetrics. And we help nonprofits and funders, whether it's impact investors or foundations, use data, information, and relationships through our software and our consultative team to kind of work more harmoniously, right? So kind of teach them to play nice in the sandbox and realize impact work. So I get to create a lot of convening space and kind of use this old basketball coach, PE teacher energy to help facilitate some real depth work, but also just putting, like I said, putting good into the world and facilitating possible. That's what I call it.
Now, you seem to have had a very successful transition from the classroom to the boardroom, as we say. Would you say that there's a lot of similarities between the edu world and the non-edu world? Was it difficult? What was that transition like for you?
You know, educators are endlessly relevant in the private sector, the sector. They're just because I think teachers, and I appreciate you. First of all, I appreciate you saying classroom, because oftentimes us PE teachers are put on this box of coach only. And I'm like, unless I'm blowing the whistle for you specifically, I ain't your coach, right? So appreciate that respect to the physical educators out there. But like, you have to be dynamic, you have to be empathetic, you have to be listening to all the folks in the room, and you have to figure out how to put some harmony and guardrails on it so folks can move. That's teacher 101 if you're good at it, right? And then you got to care about the outcomes and what's going to happen and what's being put out there. If you take that and put it in the private sector, I don't care if it's a boardroom, if you put it in for profit, if you put it in the nonprofit sector, it's still that same thing. You have all these relationships, all these people in the room with slightly different focuses and cares and passions, but you're trying to align and do something together. Well, what do teachers try to do in a classroom every day, right? And I think that's the thing. If teachers understood and if educators understood the relevance in the private sector, and even it just has to visit, you don't have to go there, but you can facilitate learning, institutional learning, all these cool things, scope and sequence, planning, curriculum, all these things with slightly different words show up in the private sector and are usually people throw money at it to a consultant to solve it. But if you're an educator, you have that dynamic kind of ability, I think. And if with a little bit of not shape shifting, but a little bit of understanding about how what language and nuance you got to deal with in this sector or that sector, you can roll.
You know, you and I have had different upbringings, but we've had similar careers, I think. Being a PE teacher myself, being in the orchestra room, you know, we both seem to have that philosophy that I need more students, and how can I affect them and make change together? I've always said, you know, 50 in an orchestra is nice, 90 is better. And I'm sure it's that same way in physical education where, all right, I can do a dodgeball game with 30, but what if I had 150 people playing it? That being in that classroom and, you know, every couple of days you're creating, you're teaching a new game, you're teaching a new skill, you're trying to hit these benchmarks. That was a very easy transition from you going from where you were into that nonprofit world where you're doing that same kind of an idea.
Yeah. I mean, I think adaptability is it, right? Like, you got to tap into your own toolbox. And for whatever reason, my mama and daddy made me with the idea of like, I'm relevant, I'm capable. And I mean it. Like, I really do. I'm capable. I'll figure it out. And if I don't figure it out, I probably have the Rolodex to really make it be figured out. So the point is, if you really look at yourself as the tool or the skill or the resource, and you realize that the environment you're in needs something else, go learn it or try or make the phone call. And for me, relationships, Rolodex, whatever you want to call it, I've always poured into building with people. So if I don't have the knowledge on my own, you damn sure believe I'm going to be able to get it one call away. And then it's about how do you put that person in position to help. To me, everything I think about is the lens of point guard. That's how I grew up. I grew up wanting to be the point guard of the Sonics. That's it. I want to be the point guard of the Sonics, a president of the United States, or a motivational speaker. Literally, that's what I wanted to be. And so that point guard mentality in the basketball coaching at Locke High School, South LA, is facilitate. How do you put people in position? And if you think that way, you're always relevant, right? If you need to be excellent at one thing, hard skill only, then you better be the best in the planet at it. And I'm not the best in the planet at a lot of things. So I think adaptability, relatability, and being able to kind of like persevere through whatever situation, whether it's tech, whether it's parenting, whether it's my relationship with my wife, either way, it's to being adaptable and being relatable.
So your group wanted to be Gary Payton.
All day. GP, the glove. If I move this thing behind me, you would see a Gary Payton jersey hanging up behind me and a Sonics pennant right by it.
Well, what is the difference, right? We all have these ideas of I'd like to get out of the classroom, or I'd like to do something beyond. I don't want to say everybody wants to get out of the classroom, but there is a difference between getting middle school students, getting high school students, and getting adults, right? And you see this in the coaching world. You know, if you're coaching college, they have to be there. When you're coaching pros, these are grown men with paychecks and you're just kind of there. What advice do you have for anybody that's out there working with adults, working with professionals, and in that world where you're guiding it, but you're a suggestion sometimes?
Inspiration over indoctrination, right? So you don't want to, you can't finger wag some adults. Come into my house and tell me what I'm doing wrong and you're going to quickly be exited, right? But you could come in and be like, wow, wonder what you're trying to do here. Talk to me about it. You have to get adults to go with you, right? You don't know, I don't use the word bully, like in a pejorative, like there's no bully pulpit. I can't make you do something, but I can inspire you. I can get in that head and heart of yours and help you understand how this could, whatever we're doing, help you do more of what you want to do. So to be able to do that, you have to understand the person's perspective, what they want to do, probably what they're afraid of, right? Well, for me, I'm an executive in a tech company, right? Well, I'm not the most techie person. I damn sure don't live in data as like, oh, this is great, more information. But I do like what it can do for me. And if I look at these things as tools and things that can help me do more of what I want to do, which is improve society, put positivity into this planet, have people work together more, yada, 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 then I start to look at myself as a little bit more than just a person participating. So when it comes to adults, they probably have similar feels. They might not be as loud as me, right? But they certainly have imposter syndromes, fear, etc. A lot of classroom teachers feel like they're the master of their domain. I never cared about that. You know why? Because the kids were. And I'm there to help them navigate whatever we're trying to do together. Well, in the private sector or with adults, you have to understand, adult learner doesn't have no time for your long-winded story. Doesn't have a lot of time for your hemming and hawing or your laziness or your lethargy or whatever the thing it is that you're bringing into the space that isn't allowing them to quickly see value in the time spent together, but also maybe there's something this person that I'm sharing space with right now can help me do more of. Well, then if you can get them to understand that, then you are also an avenue for their improvement, whether it's self-improvement, knowledge, etc. But you have to be willing to understand adults do not have time to be finger wagged, and nor should they. That's just a weird way of approaching things. And so not that teachers all do that. That's not what I want to say. But there is a different energy and inspiration and motivation are essential in working with adults.
Where did this come from? What was that aha moment that you said, okay, this is starting to click, this makes sense? Was it in the professional adult space or was it in the classroom / coaching space?
Well, it depends what you mean by like it was working. Like for me, I've always been at this in the middle of things, right? I've always found myself in the middle of things. Like I went to Pepperdine, Malibu, from Spanaway, Washington. Right. So if you visit Spandaway, Washington, and then you visit Malibu, you literally could not be more polar opposite. Right. Like I remember going to Malibu and there being a Ferrari in the student parking lot. I remember also being in Mr. Gleegi's U.S. history class when the internet finally came to my high school in 96. And we were like, he's like, type in something, Google it, like type in something you could. I mean, not even Google. You can look it up. And we're all looking at each other, And what it was, someone said Ferrari. And so the first time I saw a real Ferrari on a computer was through this internet thing in 96. And then about, I don't know, 6 months later, I see a real one in the parking lot in the kids' lot. So when I say that, being in the center of that, you quickly learn, like, not everything is the same. Not everybody around is the same. But I was nice at communicating there and here, right? And so I was like, okay, that's Malibu and Spanaway. Well, when I got to high school teaching, I was a PE teacher, but I was seen as a leader on the campus beyond the PE teacher chops and the whistle. And I started getting asked to talk about charter school reform or building parent coalitions or some of these things that are a little bit beyond PE teacher or community liaison between getting alumni to come back and like new teachers to anchor to that and just all these spaces. So for me, it was always the translation. That to me is where I knew I was nice. And I damn sure believe I'm nice with that. because I care to translate. I care to bring things together, not solo ball, not hero ball. That stuff doesn't, that's martyrdom. It doesn't last. It's exhausting. It might feel good, like, ah, I've done it. But what have you really done besides beat yourself up, exhaust yourself, etc.? And so for me, when did the light turn on? I think it turned on when I was younger, quite a bit when I was younger, because you walk this, the halls of Bethel High School in Spanaway, there's a cowboy and there's a neighborhood brother. And they're both homie friends of yours. And so you, like, it's just the reality, the rodeo champs and football stars. And like you had to be able to understand and communicate. And that to me is my superpower, my thing that I take everywhere I go, which is, I don't believe in this imposter nonsense. You are who you are. Show up. Give it a shot. Be honest. And so I think that's what I bring into this space. So, and it's just magnified. And when I get in the private sector, you're like, oh, this is really on. It's really a good skill to have now.
Well, let's go back to Washington for a couple seconds.
Yes, let's go.
Ask you to close your eyes. Mm-hmm. Who is that teacher that comes to mind? What was that one person or a couple people that were, you know, I am here and I am who I am because of? Give me a good teacher mentor story.
You have no idea. Allen Robinson, 1986, taught me to shake hands like a grown man. And mind you, I had a grown man father that passed too early. So, but he taught me how to shake hands, taught me how to take a knee and put my shoulders back when I'm shaking hands with an opponent, taught me how when we're on the wrestling mat, you take a knee at a 90-degree angle and you look your coach in the eye. These things that really like taught me unbelievable skills. Next coach in that same wrestling program, Marty Plum, Bethel All-Stars, was the wrestling program. And when I tell you what they taught you about showing up, and these were like workers. These were dudes showing up straight from work, coming to the mat. Then I could talk about Irene Hicks, the Bethel Brave Talk newspaper teacher that taught me that my words were weapons and how I spoke, people listened to me. Powerful, right? I can go on and on and on with teachers and coaches and mentors that I got lucky to be close to. Skip Hoover, rest his soul, Bill Hunt. These two gentlemen helped my dad be a coach when my dad was sick. And they taught me, like, they wouldn't look like me, but they were grown men and taught me how to show up and be respectful. My sister, senior chief, 24 years in the Navy, retired about 3 years ago. Just an unbelievable, just powerful human that decided to give her life and give her time to the country. No pleasantries, no back rubs, but my sister believes in me more than anybody else I've ever met on the planet. And so you start to see there's different facets and things and people that you can look at and pull from. And then now it's my wife, more dangerous in her work, more capable, better educator, better executive, all the things. And I get to ride shotgun with her. But that kind of peer and that love showed me I'm something. I can do something. I'm proximal to her. I must be okay to get with her, right? And get her to build with me this family. And then I can look down at my kids and talk about, like, I talk about joy and positivity. They are a bundle of chaos and wrapped in joy and positivity and a soccer ball and glitter and all the things. And so I pull inspiration from a lot of things. Now, Marcus Struther, Mentor California, I can go on and on and on and on and on. But I look for these things because they fuel me. You know what I mean? They fuel me. I'm not a deficit thinker. Not at all. I'm a very, very rich man when it comes to access to quality humans because I built relationships at scale to help. And every now and then they come back to help me, right? Beyond just fuel me. They become business partners. They become peers. They become mentors of mine. I mentor. It's just kind of it's just an approach. I think that's the way I look at it. And there's many of them, but I could go on and on, brother.
So you grew up, had great mentors, great family, great experiences. And now you're taking all of that with you and you're adding what I would call the data package. You're trying to take numbers. You're trying to take all that. What is that like now to take those experiences, take it with the up metrics, see what I did there? And there now you're trying to change your environment, your community. Now you're working with people that you're working with every single day. What's that like seeing that change? And as we say here, making that impact.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's stories. People are connected through stories and like experiences. I remember being an educator, and a lot of times I remember going into my old employer, Green Dot Public Schools, great folks, love them, love what they're doing, and like really helped me kind of develop my professional chops. But I remember sitting at these things called data days. I was district coordinator after, or after school coordinator, athletics coordinator. I ran all after school and athletics for the district. And then you had the ed team, the rest of the ed team, which was the English and math and all these other folks showing up. And they were so heavy on the data side. And I don't want to say this as throwing a stone, but I do want to say this as I have a different approach, which is information is important as it can be translated and related to reality. If you just pull data out and think that everything in education or everything with people is data points or an Excel spreadsheet or a Google Sheet dot, and do not understand the human testimony that lives in that. Mm. I referenced Marcus Strother a few minutes ago at Mentor California. He talks about life data matters too, right? And so what is that? That's that other stuff that also is part of the story. And so for me, understanding that, taking the story and actually humanizing it, helps people understand what we mean when we talk about after school programs are a way for young people to spread their wings, right? That isn't being soft and silly. That's true if it's done right. And then you can back into objective or subjective data to put bass in your voice when you talk about it. But if you just look at the binary numbers, how many kids, how many sessions, how many whatever, heads in beds, we call it. Like, what is that showing? Nobody's learning from that, right? Scale it, do more of it. Is it good? What are you trying to do? When I was coaching basketball at Locke, I remember talking to kids about, I'm preparing you for that executive handshake you're going to have in, when you're 25, 26, 27. Like, people were like, aren't you the basketball coach? Yeah, but let's keep it real. We're not all going to the league, right? So what are we doing? But I know this, that interaction I have with a bunch of those players to this day, some of them are almost 40 years old, texting me, coach, this is what I'm up to. Coach, what do you think? Coach, I'm going to be in town. Coach. One of them was working with the Dodgers. One of like just doing cool stuff, right? To me, that's the story about data and information and relationships. And if you can put those in harmony together, well, now you got something. And that's what I try to do with philanthropy, impact investors, nonprofit to take in capital. Regardless, you got to be able to articulate what it is you do. Who do you serve? What do you serve them with? Is anybody better off for that? How does it relate to the community? And what is quality? And if you can start to understand those things through information that you care to look at, or maybe are gapped on what to look at relative to what you want, then we can help you. We can help you do that. And not only can we help you do that, we can help you do that and then probably connect you to some people that might be interested in funding that. And so when you can start putting those things together, now it's not just an exercise in like doing things, doing the work, right? It's doing what you want and how you want to do it in a way that honors you, honors those who you serve, but also allows you to put the kind of entrepreneurial spirit behind it and say, I'm tired of dancing in front of people with a pitch. Well, then get sharp with what you do. Otherwise, you're going to keep dancing, right? And then the funder side, stop having people dance. Be clear about what you're trying to fund and how you're going to do it. Now you're going to empower people and stop creating these weird hoops to jump through. And what about this? What about if I do it like this? How about if I pivot it and cut it like this? Like, stop it. What are we trying to do? How can we do that? And how can we play nice in the sandbox together? I get to live that every day through our tech and our team, and I get to rep the team. The team's big, the team's solid. So, but I'm excited to be the kind of one of the ones out in front running around.
Well, I'd love to know the question of how, right? Because you just mentioned everything that we kind of talk about a lot here. That helping the stories, keeping the energy, keeping it real, all of those things. But there's so many educators out there, public speakers, the same professionals, I'm sure you can think of them, that try to do all of that and hide behind the PowerPoint deck. How do you walk into those meetings? How do you walk into those investors? How do you walk into that community and show that? How do you make that movement happen?
Sure.
It's not slides. It's not you. I'm sure there's a combination, but how do you tell those stories successfully? How do you bottle that and teach that to somebody?
Yeah. I mean, we do it. There's a real approach the way we do it. I mean, we have one way we do it. We put folks in a collaborative cohort setting where we're kind of working together over time on what is it that you're trying to take on impact-wise, having organizations work kind of proximal to each other. So in Southeast Michigan, for example, we got an awesome project going there with like 30 nonprofits, the Ballmer Group, and another funder kind of underwrote and supported this work, but it's powered by them to say, here's the resource. This nonprofit community's asked for assistance in a couple different ways, capacity building, et cetera. And we've identified a way to say, if we help organizations with the tech and the team to help them realize their work and dive into topics like collaboration, not just being a buzzword, but actually creating learning sessions. It's kind of like taking the college lens of a learner, an adult learner, but taking it out of intellectual superiority and getting in and deconstructing and saying, what is the story you want to tell? And a lot of organizations truly struggle with that because they try to tell a story about raising money. That's not the story. Now, the story that might be the fuel for the work, like as far as the money that funds the revolution, so to speak, but it's not the goal. The goal isn't to raise money. The goal is to have enough capital in your organization so that you can do the work that your logo, your mission, your values all say that you're trying to do. And what we often do see is nonprofit executives end up spending most of their time fundraising. But what happens if your nonprofit is designed to, I don't know, grow the amount of gainfully employed black men in Chicago? Well, you might be a terrible fundraiser, but you might have a great program and a great focus. Well, then all you need is the capital to help. We can help refine some of that work where you can put what it is that you do underneath you. So we talk about impact frameworks. Very simple. I already said it. Who do you serve? What do you serve them with? What's the quality of that service? Is anybody better off? And how does it relate to the bigger community you serve? And if organizations start understanding that and starting to look at who do I serve? Students in South Los Angeles. What do I serve them with? Quality after school interventions that are designed to inspire joy. Great. How do I know that what I'm doing is quality? Well, we measure blank, blank, blank. So all these things kind of come together and eventually give you clarity. And if you have clarity and you believe in what you do, then what you can more easily do is turn to the next person and say, this is what I do, and this is why I want you to know about it. That's not a pitch. That's, I want to share the good word, right? And I think when you start to shift, we're not pitching, we're not dancing, to, no, I need you to come in here and say, I got something for you. I want to talk to you about this, right? That confidence, that understanding that comes with rooted research and plan and execution, that comes off a lot more attractive. And at the end of the day, you're trying to attract funding. You're trying to attract more participants in your program. If you're serving young people, you're trying to attract parents' understanding of why you do it. If you're trying to attract a school district, you're trying to get them to understand why this plays into their overall work. But it comes from clarity. And a lot of the work I think that folks do is really noble, but it just needs some clarity. And I know, because I was certainly a victim of that way in the past, like real excited, but not as focused. And I think that's what we try to really help bring.
I think every teacher needs to take a lesson from what you just mentioned. I mean, so many times you sit into a room, and this is coming from, 15 years of being an instructional coach, walking sure. into everybody's, today we're talking about westward expansion. This is what it is. Here is the players. Here is their results. Here's your homework. You lose that. This is why we're doing it. You lose the idea of getting buy-in. I try this in my own classrooms, like, here's the reason why we're doing this, because I want you to be able to, or because this happened to me. And so I start with the why. Like, we're all at here, right? Sure. And if I can get somebody to buy into that, suddenly you realize the behaviors go down, the interest goes up, the action in the classroom comes around, and you just have them. You have the class, you have the audience, you have the nonprofit. If people know why you're doing things, you've got it.
Because that to me, I was going to say trigger. I need to get a better word. That makes ownership more likely. And once you have ownership of what you're spending your time, it ties back to that conversation we were having earlier about adult learners. Once you have ownership over it, once it's about my why, well, now I'm interested, because people are kind of into themselves. Just be real. They're kind of into themselves, and that's okay. But like, they want to like know they're spending their time on something that's valuable. And if we start with the why do I move? I have a why about, because I lost $8 million in grant funds in one day when I was running after school programs. So you don't got to talk to me about data and funding diversification. I got my why. Because I had to go face all these students in Los Angeles and their parents and articulate why they can't have these after-school programs the same way we had in the past, because, for lack of a better word, I wasn't as good of a grant writer as the California Department of Education wanted me to be when they were renewing the grants. And so the exact line was, I lacked an effective data strategy to articulate my outcomes I aspire to have in after-school programs. I remember it vividly, right? Well, now I get the opportunity with UpMetrics to kind of build this, the muscle of helping organizations do this so that they don't have to take that horrible experience of, I don't have the resource now to do the thing that I want to do. Now I got to go do what? Hat in hand. Please, Mr. May I. Please, Mrs. May I. That ain't how I want to go through this planet, period. I don't want other people in education sector, nonprofit sector, anywhere having to, I hope I can get. No, let's teach you to be dangerous with it. What do you want? How you gonna go get it? How can we be clear? How can we, you know, and then so that plays into it. It's not utopia. Don't get it twisted. It isn't a panacea for all ills, but it certainly is more possible. And I think that's what it's always about is if you can make it possible, then it's more likely to happen.
So let's say I'm a company. I'm a nonprofit. I'm reaching out to you at UpMetrics, and I say, Stephen, let's sit down and have a conversation. I'd like to partner. I could use some help.
Sure.
What do I need to have with me, and who am I? What is your partner in this world that you're looking to do things with?
Yeah, I mean, look, we are if you look at the tripod, it's impact investors, it's nonprofits, and it's philanthropic organizations, folks giving out capital. So we kind of look at capital as whether it's philanthropic or whether it's impact investing or whether it's government, it's still capital. So money going out, right? So there's the money going out. And then there's the nonprofits with that lived experience and that social genius that are doing the work in communities. So if you're a nonprofit and you're reaching out to me, first of all, I'm going to say, ping me on LinkedIn and we'll get after it. I want to talk to you right now, not because I'm thirsty, because I'm interested. And this is what we do, right? We want to have these conversations. And once you know that there's somebody on the other side of that Zoom or that whatever medium we got that's truly interested, that has a lived experience that might be able to support you and truly wants to help give you tools and resources and network, well, then now I bet you we're tapping into your ideas of like, I wonder what, is this real? Is this not? And then you start to talk to people, right? Get beyond the pitch deck. Get beyond the deck. Talk to me. I guarantee if you talk to us, you'll start to understand, oh, wow, there's a way, there's an approach to this, right? So upmetrics.com, go on there. You'll be able to click whatever facet of those the aisle you're on, whether it's a funder, whether it's a nonprofit, and you'll start to see that our language speaks to you. It isn't a miracle that just all of a sudden works for everybody. There is slightly different language you're talking with impact investors versus nonprofits. It is not dumbed down. It's appropriate. It's calibrated. It's built with people to inform it that actually have spent time in those spaces. So if you're a nonprofit that's trying to struggle or trying to figure out how to stay relevant right now in society, given some of the headwinds that are coming down from various places, I don't want to go too deep into that, but you get what I'm trying to say. Folks are going after the nonprofit community for their taking the money, not using it, not being thoughtful, yada, 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 some nonsense. Well, let's talk about how you can change this from you are cute doing nonprofit work the way some of these people negatively look at it and say you are an essential social service. And if you truly understand what you're trying to do and have clarity, well, we can help you put that out in a way that really gets you in these spaces in a different way. It is not giving genius. These people are already, right? It's just a matter of the tools. When I was coaching hoops, I needed to prepare you for the team that you're facing tomorrow, right? So I have to calibrate it. The team we're facing right now in the impact sector is kind of odd, right? It's prove it. Prove it. Like, what does prove it mean? Like, if I'm inspiring people, like, you don't tell a teacher to prove it, you taught them. You keep teaching, you keep working, you keep building, and over time, things change. How can we directionally look at information to see if that change is happening in enough time, let it to go by? So these are the kind of folks that we try to help. Funders, same thing, but it's a slightly different focus with like, y'all, you know, some of your behaviors over here are causing all this to happen, right? Good and bad. How can we be more harmonious? How can we consider empowering folks with resources and technology and team to help them close the gap on the capacities that they're struggling with because of lack of resources, et cetera. So That's a long-winded way of saying reach out to us.
So, Stephen, look, we talked a little bit about where you came from. We talked a little bit about where you are today. And obviously, you're having an impact not only in your community, but in the world around you. I want to throw one last topic up, which is I know something that is near and dear to your heart, both in your home, but also in your community, which is mentoring.
Ooh, let's go.
Talk to us a little bit about this. You are, and I'm not, I never give details. I always let my guests give details, sure. But you are a dad. So you are a mentor in that capacity. You are an educator. I never say former teacher, or you're an educator.
Facts.
You have that. You've got people that look up to you as dad, as mister, as sir, as coach, as all of those different titles. And you've also got these other projects that you do in mentoring.
Sir.
Number one, what does that mean to you to be in those positions? But number two, what are you doing these days with that?
I never take it lightly, ever. Right? That mentorship is a free resource that we have endless amounts of in this planet. It's just if you're willing to offer it up, right? I've always had, like, I'm the board chair of Mentor California, so which is a part of the Mentor National Network. I'm on the strategic planning group with the Mentor National Organization. I believe in this as a day-to-day lifestyle, but also as I see in the nonprofit world, and I see there's actually vehicles to do this as service, right? And to me, it's service. Like, I remember being in my little town when my dad was passing and not having a whole bunch of Black men that looked like my dad that I could look at and talk to. Not because they didn't exist, they just weren't in front of me. And so I had a bunch of great men that were around and women that were around, but they didn't look like me, right? They didn't look like me, and they didn't sound like me, and they didn't rock like my dad rocked, and they just didn't do those things. And so for me, part of the reason I went into teaching is because I wanted to be that for young people that oftentimes don't have access to that. That's it. And so I've taken that now and putting that into a professional, personal world in motion. It's like my personal philanthropy. The way that I look at philanthropy isn't just financial money and a tax incentive. I look at it as acts of service. And if you put your time out there, your talent, your treasure, whichever one of those you want to put, or all of them, then you can do more. And so I make myself available daily for folks that want to have a conversation, that need a nudge, that need someone to help them look around the corner, right? Because that's, to me, what mentorship is, helping someone see up there around the corner. Because I've been there before, around that corner. I can help you understand if there's a big old dog over there, you might want to be mindful. Right? Bring a treat. Simple as that. But like, it is endless. It is endless. And if it's done right, we're going to start to see a lot more improvement in this, I don't know, interesting society we're navigating now, where everybody is me, 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 mine, them, those, other, that. No. Let's start working on each other with partnership of mentors and access to mentors. And they're in all facets. They are not because of their title. Your title does not allow you to be a mentor. That's something that people have to understand. You can be mentored truly by a kid, by a neighbor, by a person at the store, if there is intention behind it. And to me, I will, until it's the lights out for me, I will always make myself available to lean into that space of mentorship, because it's been so valuable for me.
The website there is mentorcaliforniayouth.org. We're going to make sure that we have this in our show notes and everything over at teachercast.net/podcast. Stephen, with everything that you've had and all of the amazing experiences, I'm sure that you would have, and I know you know what I mean by this, being an educator, a teachable moment, something that you had happened to you, have said to you, that was that pivot towards putting you on that butterfly path to make it where you are today. What was that one thing where you're like, okay, I got it. I know where I'm going to go one day.
I can tell you a very, very direct one. And it's not I'm not proud of it. I was a teacher at Locke High School. This young man was an eighth grader coming into ninth grade. He came to the summer bridge program. We had something going on. Good kid, was helping me clean the gym, do some stuff. Just a nice little kid. He needed to go into the locker room to go to the restroom. I let him borrow my keys. Imagine PE teacher keys, public school, like 900, right? I gave him the key that had the key to go to the bathroom. You know, I gave that as the one I handed. When he came back, something told me to check, just like, because I know I needed to go get into a locker in a minute that was locked, clean out lockers. And the locker key was missing. And I kind of cut the kid off, period. Because to me, where I was raised, if you steal or if you do something nefarious with your access, you kind of lose that trust. This was an eighth grade kid coming into ninth grade. And I remember seeing him as he finished school 4 years later and being like, damn, if I just would have not, like, I was so like, I was raised by a Southern Black military man. Like, you, there's a certain behavior needed and expected. And I should have been more understanding of the age the young man was and used that to really help him. And so in the missed teachable moment there, it's taught me a lot about, you can just throw people away if you want, but then you can't dare look back and wonder why they didn't turn into whatever you thought possible. And so instead of coming with the hammer, sometimes you got to come with diplomacy and you got to come with the conversation. And it's hard. As a parent, it's hard for me because sometimes I'm like, these are your vegetables, are good for you. Let's move. But there's not a day that I don't go back and think about that. And I'll just say the young man's name was Z, not his full name, but his name was Z. And it sticks in my soul. It was like, why did you not use that opportunity to be the mentor? And then instead you wanted to be the administrator or the police or no disrespective, but you know what I mean? I just missed it. And I think about him all the time. And I think about kind of using that to field the grace needed to continue to go forward. So it's easy to be hard and black and white. And so
I got to ask, did you get the key back? Did you confront him? Like, what was the
energy? I did get the key back, and I got the key back, and I wasn't thoughtful about it. I was like, give me my stuff. Now, you know, it was just not good. It wasn't harmful, but it wasn't positive.
But it happened that day.
Right away.
Okay.
And I felt good about getting it back. You're like, but what? The issue wasn't the key coming back to me. The issue was how I could have worked with that kid. You know what I mean? That was the issue. So for me, the teachable moment, and I look, all moments are teachable if you're willing to be available for the lesson, right? Was why did you choose to use the hammer in that moment and not use you know, the heart? And I think I could have used the heart in that moment, and I should have used the heart in that moment.
So if you and I were out having lunch today, and up to the table walks Gary Payton, what would you want him to say to you?
What would I want Gary to say to me? You could have been the point guard, but I got there first. That's what I want him to say. I'd want him to say, man, I see you. I see that you're putting good into this world, and I played hoops and did my thing, and you're doing your thing, and they're both awesome. I'd also ask him to say, like, let's play. I want to play, not because I can compete against him, but because – Lord, that would have been dope to be on a court with GP, the glove, like defense first, like just John and excited. But he was electrifying to watch because of, you know, it rains a lot up in the Northwest. You're in you're watching stuff, and all of a sudden he was just like, him and Sean Kemp were like, boom, just fire. And so I would want Gary to know that I'm putting joy into this world like he put joy into mine.
Now, if he walks up to the table and he's wearing a Miami Heat shirt,
I'd be like, hey, man, I get it. We all got to do what we got to do. There's no beef. It's professional. It is what it is, because I still enjoyed watching him play there, too. Like, that was just my guy. Like, just I'm a Jason Kidd fan, a GP fan. These are all like the same lineage, and that Oakland point guard, that mentality. There's so much about it that and I still see him talk about things now. And I just, when I see him talk, I still turn into this like 11-year-old kid is like, you know, like mouth open, eyes open. And I just think that's dope. And I'm like that with a couple other players, Jordan too, of course, but GP was my guy, truly my guy.
So the next time that you're speaking in public, large room, you have all the billionaires watching you, you out there trying to do your thing for your people, and your dad walks in the back of the room. What do you want him to say to you?
Damn, it gets me emotional even hearing it, right? It really does. I'd want him to say, you're my son. And you're doing it. Like, I get emotional talking about my dad no matter what. It's a point of pride. Like, I have his name. You know what I mean? It's the same name. And so he passed at about 46-ish. I'm 46 now. It's nice to know that I got the mantle now. And I'd want him to come in and say, you got it. You write the story. That's what I'd want.
Stephen Mannix, you are an amazing guy. I am so happy that you decided to spend some time with me today. Your story is amazing. The impact that you're having in your family, in your career, in your area of expertise is amazing. I would go out on a ledge to say every single student and teacher that came into your classroom is better off because they have known you. And I know that this show will be too. Thank you so much for coming on today. Please make this the first time that you come on. I look forward to talking to you again on the show.
Hey, I appreciate you. This was awesome, and I appreciate the opportunity, man. Nice to meet you.
For more information, you can head on over to upmetrics.com. And of course, as we mentioned before, mentorcaliforniayouth.org. This is the first time you're listening to the show. Don't forget to hit that like and subscribe button. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify. And the video for this is, of course, going to be over on our channel at teachercast.net/YouTube. If you have a story about making an impact in your classroom or in your community, we would love to feature you guys on the show. Head on over to teachercast.net/contact for more information about how you can be a guest on our next episode. And that wraps up this episode of Digital Learning Today. On behalf of Stephen and everybody here on TeacherCast, my name is Jeff Bradbury, reminding you guys to keep up the great work in your classrooms and continue sharing your passions with your students.
You've been listening to the TeacherCast Educational Network, hosted by Jeff Bradbury. Please reach out to the show with all of your questions on Twitter at TeacherCast or online at www.teachercast.net. Be sure to subscribe to our podcast so you don't miss any future episodes. And please take a moment to write a review in the App Store.